Tonight I want to look at Nehemiah chapter 3. Now Nehemiah 3 is a bit like one of those chapters in Chronicles, which is just full of genealogies. I'm not going to read the whole chapter because it literally is name after name, but I'm going to pick out some things and I'm just going to highlight some things for us tonight. Okay, so here's the thing I want you to notice is worship is a priority. Eliashib, the high priest and his fellow priests, went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. They dedicated it and set its doors in place, building it as far as the Tower of 100, which they dedicated, and as far as the Tower of Hananel. All right? What I want you to notice is that the first thing that is mentioned is that they rebuilt the sheep gate. Why is the sheep gate significant? Why is it called the sheep gate? Because the sheep went through it. All right? But the sheep for what? The sheep for the sacrifice. And so before they did anything else, attention was paid to repairing access for the sheep to get to the temple because worship was a priority. They could have rebuilt the trade gates. They could have rebuilt those important gates that were transit points for the cargo, for the goods, for the food, for the wine, for the olives, for the wood, for all the other bits and pieces to come in and out of Jerusalem. But what did they do? No, they rebuilt the sheep gate first, because worship is a priority. And the first thing that we want to establish as we rebuild the walls, that we remember it's all about Jesus, it's all about God, and that worship is a priority. Now, a number of things that I've got under this heading that I want to share with you tonight. First of all, is that worship must always be a priority in our lives. It's not that our lives should that worship should revolve around our agenda, but our agenda should revolve around worship. So that whatever we do, whatever big decision we make, whatever we do in our lives, we need to ask ourselves the question, how does this affect my worship, my ability to worship? How does it affect my relationship with God? So whether it would be a relationship with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, there's only two or three youngsters here tonight that perhaps that would apply to. Does this boy stop me from worshipping God? Does this girl stop me from worshipping God? When you think about taking up a new hobby, does this hobby interfere with my walk with the Lord? Does this job interfere with my walk with the Lord? Whatever we do in life, we should always be asking ourselves the question, how does this affect my walk with the Lord? So, as an example, when I was one of the governors at the infants and nursery school, they had a policy that everything that you did, every decision that you made, had to go through the equality policy. So whether you were making a decision about school dinners or lighting in the school, it had to conform to the equality policy. So, as an example, when I was the governor there, I was the health and I was appointed energy consultant or energy governor. I don't know what they call it. Goodness. And I was responsible for the instigation of new lighting in the school, so that you know that lighting that turns on when you walk down the corridor. Well, they were having that installed, energy efficient. So that was my job to oversee that and organise that. And one of the things that it had to do, it had to pass the equality test. Did the installation of these new lights affect people who were from a different race? No. Did it affect anybody? Did it adversely affect the installation of these lights, adversely affect the fact a woman more than a man? All this equality stuff. Did it adversely affect the disabled? Well, actually, it did, because they were going to put these light switches up here, but they had to be down here because it had to be able to be reached by somebody in a wheelchair, you see. So when they did these new £5 notes, they should have gone through the equality policies, but they didn't, you see. They should have said to themselves, does this new £5 note affect men and women differently? No, it doesn't. Does it affect whether you're black or white or any colour in between. No, it doesn't. Does it affect if you're a person of a certain religion who doesn't eat meat and don't touch gelatine or pork thing? Oh, it did, you see. See, they didn't do the test on the £5 note, because these £5 notes have got gelatine in, haven't they? And a lot of people don't like that. Anyway, what am I saying here? Get back to the point here. That when we do something, when we take a new hobby up, when we take a new job on, when we have a new relationship, whatever we do in our daily life, we put it through the filter, does this affect my relationship with God? Does it affect my ability to worship Him? In fact, you know, the question that I remember as a teenager, having with the pastor at the church I was at, with Gail, one of the questions that they said that you should ask yourself when you were thinking about choosing a spouse was, does this person draw you closer to God or push you further away from God? Good question. And only if that person drew you closer to God were they the right person to marry. So you put yourself through that, put yourself asking all yourself those questions. And you say to yourself, Ian, oh, you're being silly, aren't you? No, I'm not being silly, I'm being deadly serious. And I think we need to make that choice now, because we need to do that check before we start, because after you've fallen in love with somebody that's drawing you away from the Lord, and you're halfway down the road, miles away from God, it's a lot more difficult to come back. So we need to make our minds up. We need to make sure that worship is a priority. And of course, you know, Joshua has this hobby of, what you may call it, Yorkshire Traction Honley Band. You know, and there are plenty of occasions where he could go away on a Sunday and say, Mum, Dad, we've got this job here, we've got this job there, we've got this job there. And we say, well, does it affect your ability to worship God? Yes, it does. Now, we let him go to Remembrance Sunday when it's over at Dewsbury and what have you, and there's maybe the odd occasion where we say okay because they're stuck or whatever. But worship is a priority. And worship needs to be a priority for us. When it comes to priorities in our life, we need to make sure God is first. Alarm bells should start to ring if you think God has told you to take up this hobby or take up this job, or take up this boy or girlfriend, if it affects your ability to worship. And they had a time of dedication right at the beginning of the construction project. We must make sure we are dedicated to do God's work before we start. Because it's all about Jesus. It's all about His face. Not all about the work, it's about His face. And I was at a meeting earlier on this week with some pastors in West Yorkshire, and we were talking about this, that the thing they were saying is that God wants a relationship with you. He wants to be your friend. More than anything else, He wants to be your friend. He's not so much interested in your work, He is interested in your friend, being your friend. So, as an example, the Pharisees were very good at being obedient. They did everything. They did everything right by the book. But Jesus was not so interested in about them doing the right thing in dotting the I's and crossing the T's. He was more interested in a relationship with them. And the whole story of the lost son, the prodigal son, whatever you might want to call it, is about having a relationship with the father. The older son thought he had done everything that his father had wanted, because he did everything by the rules. All everything you have asked me to do, I have done. But he didn't love him. Let's make sure that when we do that which we do for God, we are not just doing it for doing its sake, but because we love God. God doesn't just want obedience, He wants willing obedience. He wants us to do things because we love him, because we're dedicated to him. So worship was a priority. The priests were not afraid to get their hands dirty. Eliashib, the high priest, and his fellow priests went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. Hey, you know, okay, who remembers? I'm looking at Mr. Chris, he'll remember this. Back in the 1970s, you remember this. You might, it might still be true today. Demarcation. All right, remember demarcation? If you drop something on the floor, oh, it's not my... If you dropped a spanner on the floor, it's not my job to pick the spanner up off the floor, it's somebody else's job to pick up the spanner from the floor. Well, I work for Sainsbury's. Did I tell you I work for Sainsbury's? We had cleaners who cleaned the floor, but they only cleaned the floor. It wasn't their job to sweep the floor. All right, so they literally had one of those machines that did the sucking and scrubbing. You've come across those big machines, haven't you? And if the floor was filthy, dirty with rubbish on it, they just push straight through it, and so they just scrub mud all over the place. And the amount of times I saw that happen, why are you doing that? It's not my job to sweep up. So they just clean through the mud. Well, the point that I'm making here is that sometimes you can get to churches where the priests say, well, I'm not doing that because it's not my job. Talking about churches that we used to go to, you remember, Gal, the churches that we used to go to, sometimes the pastor would have his own cup of tea or own cup of coffee in his own little private little office back behind the main stage of the auditorium, away from the ordinary people, a cup of coffee and his own cakes in his own little office with the deacons. And they'll never let me get like that. We ain't got anywhere out the back to do it. Anyway. But you get my point, is that sometimes... You can get within a church, well, I'm not doing that because that's not my job. I once went back to the cafe, if I start saying too much, I have to go back and cut it all out. I once met somebody who, after I met them and I said, do you know where I've just been? I've just been up somebody's loft and I've just wiggled their bull cock because their water tank was leaking. And, you know, I've just done a pastoral visit, you know, and that's what I ended up doing, going up their loft. And they said, Ian, you should never do that kind of thing. When I'm a pastor, because they said that they wanted to be a pastor, when I'm a pastor, I should never do anything like that. I'll never take anybody to the hospital. I'll never do anybody's shopping. I'll never help anybody with their finances. Because a pastor's job is to pray for people and to do the preaching. I says, hang on a minute, you've got a lot to learn. Because a pastor's job is to encourage and support people, as well as to pray with people and do the tea. But it, you know, it's everything. And as we come as a church to build, say, well, I'm not going to witness to that person because that's so-and-so's job. I'm not going to give a prophetic word because so-and-so does that. I'm not going to do this because so-and-so does that. I'm not going to make the tea because so-and-so does that. I'm not. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The priests were not afraid to get their hands dirty. So I want you to see that the priests were an example. And whatever... your role in the church, you should be a good example. Whatever we do. Example in prayer. Example in the way that we behave. You know, this is particularly true for parents and grandparents, particularly true for anybody really, because people watch us. You know, people watch us everywhere that we are. People watch us more. You know, because we are Christians, at work, people watch us more carefully than they do other people. Do you notice that? You ever noticed that when I was at that well-known supermarket that I've mentioned already once tonight? So, people used to watch me more than they used to watch anybody else. So if I got a little bit fed up and lost my cool or something like that, or threw something across... No, I didn't do that. But but you know, they notice. People notice. You know, if Joe Bloggs throws something a bit harshly into the biffer with a bit of gusto, they don't say a blind word. They say anything. If I do it, if you do it, you're a Christian, you... They notice it. Therefore, we must need to be good examples to the world and to our own children, to our own grandchildren, and to other people in the church. Right. Another thing that we need to say here, as an aside, the priests were not afraid to get their hands dirty. This Eliashib person, he was there on the first day, making sure that worship was a priority. But later on in Nehemiah, we'll read that actually he stopped doing the work and he joined the enemies of Nehemiah. And I just want to say that it's not so much how you start that's important, but it's how you finish. And that you finish. I heard two stories. I don't know quite which one to share. Perhaps I'll share both of them. But I was going up to a funeral on Friday morning over at Elland, and on the way I had the radio on. It was Radio 4, a Today programme, about 8:30, and they were interviewing Ian Paisley Jr. regarding the fact that Martin McGuinness had decided to stand down. And Justin Webb, the interviewer on Radio 4 Today, said to Ian Paisley Jr., "You consider Martin McGuinness your friend. How can you consider him your friend? How can you say all these nice things that you've just said about him, and yet, not only 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, he was murdering people, he was a commander in the IRA, and he was doing all these nasty things?" And I thought Ian Paisley Jr. said something very gracious. He said, doesn't matter what people have done in the past, or what they've done along the way, it's who they are now that is important. And I thought that was very interesting. Because when God looks to us, you know, it's not so much how we started or how we did in between, but did we finish? And are we willing to keep going? Here's the other story that I heard today that might continue to illustrate this picture. And that is, this morning I was also listening to the radio. This time I was listening to the Sunday programme, again about 8:30. And that, Martin Flowers, was it? Tom Flowers? Anyway, Flowers. Bob Flowers. The man who was the chairman of the Co-op Bank, who was also the Methodist minister. And this week, this Methodist minister had been defrocked. He's no longer a lay preacher. The Methodist Church had removed his credential. And he was quite upset about this. He says, "I think they've been very ungracious to me. Because they haven't..." See, Bob Flowers, by the way, the Co-op bank manager, he's been defrocked because he was in a scandal which exposed that he was a bit of a drug addict. He was on crystal meth and goodness knows what. And he was hiring male prostitutes. So, horror of horrors, you know. And he said, "Well, I'm disappointed that the Methodist Church have defrocked me." And Justin Webb had said, "Have you still got a problem with drugs?" He says, "Well, it would be a lie to say that I've still not got an addiction problem." "And are you still got these issues with LGBT? And he says, "Oh, yes," he says, "but I think the church ought to catch up with the world, what the world thinks." And then he said, "Yes, I made mistakes, but I think the church should have considered what had happened in the 39 years previous when I was a good boy." No. He may have been a good boy, but it's how you finish that's important. Right, so Eliashib started off well, ended badly. May it be a reminder to us that when we do our ministry, that we continue and we are persistent and we are dedicated. And go through it all. All right. The priests weren't afraid to get their hands dirty. There was a place for everyone. They didn't need 1,000 masons and carpenters to rebuild the wall. Uziel, son of Hariah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired the next session, and Hananiah, one of the perfume makers, made repairs next to it. I'm just making the point that there's a place for us all. There was loads of people working along there. There was a place for everyone and a job for everyone to do. We have different gifts according to the grace given to us. Some won't work. The next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa, but their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. Now, I don't think it was the point that they didn't want to get their hands dirty. You know, we're too good for this, we're not going to get our hands dirty. They refused to be told what to do. That's the point. They refused to be told what to do. And when we look at the Hebrew, the commentators tell me that the kind of language used is that of an ox being tethered to a yoke, being an ox being yoked, and the ox being rebellious and being refused to get its neck into the yoke and do its work in the ploughing. So there's a bit of pride here, I think, is what we're talking about. We've got to be people who have not got to be so stiff-necked that we refuse to work because we think that we know better. Now, this is important stuff, and it's relevant stuff, and it's stuff that you might say, well, this will never happen, but I say to you, because it might. There was a gentleman in the church who was a technology geek. He knew everything there was to know about PA and microphones and lighting and computers and what have you, and he served the church well. And over the years, he decided that he was going to put a state-of-the-art system in, so he put some computers in and overhead projectors and got a nice PA system in and lighting and everything. So it was a nice setup. And what was even better from the pastor's point of view and from the church leadership's point of view is that he paid for it all out of his own pocket. So he had all these fancy gizmos, all these fancy projectors, all these fancy things that made nice sounds on the PA and everything. And the fella, over the years, had financed it himself. And then one day, the pastor said to him, very appreciative of what you're doing, but you know, on the overhead projector, because what he thought he'd do some moving images behind the words. So you know when we have our words up here, there's a static blue background. Mm-hmm. All right. Sometimes we might have some pictures. We've had the odd picture behind the background once, mm-hmm. too. But in some churches like to be very trendy, and they have moving backgrounds behind the words. But unfortunately, there were some people in his congregation, it just sent them a little bit dizzy. So he said to the fella, Can you just do me a favour? Can we just go back to a static background? Because, you know, the moving is just sending just the people a little bit dizzy. Could you help with that? And by the way, one of your gizmos that you've got on the PA, there's a few people whose hearing aids it's just jangling with, all right? Can you make an adjustment? And the fella said, well, you like it or lump it? And the pastor said, well, I'm just asking you just to make a few amendments, just to be helpful. Well, to cut a long story short, the man said, that's it. And he had a key to the church, and the next Sunday when they went in, all the projectors had gone, all the microphones had gone, all the computers had gone, everything else had gone technological. He'd even taken the jolly conduit away as well, that the cables were encased in. And he says, like it or lump it, I'm going to lump it. I'm taking it all away. And he took everything out. So the next week when they came, they had to get the old overhead projector out. You don't even know what one of those is, do you? Overhead projector is. And sing out loud without microphones, all because he couldn't be told what to do. Now, the point I'm bringing around here is that's sort of a bit of a exaggerated illustration, but I want to bring it back down to us here, apply it to us, because there will be times when we get to the building. And I'll use another illustration, a very simple illustration, silly illustration, just to make the point. But we'll get to one of the rooms at the new building and we'll say, I like it blue. Vera says, I like it pink. Well, I'm going to paint it blue. Well, if you paint it blue, I'm not going to help you. Eh? Eh?
Half and half.
Half and half.
Yeah.
But do you see my point? Is that I want us to be aware before we start planning and getting our teeth, getting into the building process, that there will be times when you might say, well, I'm sure we could do it this way. I'm sure I'd like it done this way, and it would be nicer if we did it this way. And you might say, well, I'll let them get on with it and do it, but I just won't take part. Well, there will be times when you won't agree with what we do. It doesn't mean to say we won't listen to anybody. We won't say, well, I'd like it pink, well, let's just have it purple then, or whatever. Not that we'll ignore anybody. It won't be so that we're so pig-headed that we'll say, well, like it or lump it. But remember, it's teamwork. And maybe there'll be bits and pieces that we won't like about the lighting, and oh, that's too bright, or whatever. I'm not coming anymore if we have these lights. Oh, it's just like them. Some won't work. Others worked with all their hearts. Next to him, Barak, son of Zabdi, zealously prepared another section from the angle to the entrance of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. He worked zealously, with all his heart. He did things properly. Joshua had an exam this week at school. Scotland. Big questions about Scotland, and it's not only to test your knowledge, which you needed to have, but also you were allowed to take your big file in, which is about that big, so that you could test your knowledge, you could check your knowledge. So it's not only just about testing your knowledge, but also knowing where to find the relevant information in your package for the tourist operator section. Thursday, two of the 15 people in his class didn't even bring their file with them. So they weren't prepared. They were slapdash. They were half-hearted. They hadn't even come prepared. And they spent the whole morning photocopying other people's sheets so that they had something to take with them into the exam. The exam was an hour and 15 minutes. 50 questions, was it? Hour and 15 minutes to count on to 50 questions. Joshua, he did about after an hour, and he says, I'm going to check mine now. I'm going to go through, make sure that I'm happy with them. And he got, he's not here now, he's gone home, he's not very well. He got 98%. Very good. The teacher was amazed. Never known anybody get so much touch. So, good boy. Worked hard. Did it diligently. Did it zealously. He highlighted everything in his notes and everything. Now, the lad next to him, he finished after half an hour. And this is what Joshua's words. He's slapdash, he is. He's slapdash. Slapdash. He only got 50 or whatever. I don't know what he got. He only got a merit. He wasn't very happy, but he did it slapdash. What I'm coming to say is that this lad zealously did it. When he did something, he did it properly. He did it with his whole heart. And when we come to witness, when we come to tell others about the Lord, it's not a half-hearted thing. It's not a slapdash thing. When we come to the building and we start thinking about all the bits and pieces that we'll have to do in the building, no doubt we'll have to get a paintbrush between one or two of us and do some bits and pieces. But it won't be a slapdash thing. We should do it with our whole heart as if we're doing it for the Lord. Hallelujah. And we are doing it for the Lord. You've got to remember that when you're doing your work, you're doing it as if you're doing it for the Lord. Work as if you are doing it for Jesus. So when you're pulling the pint, it's pulling it as if you're pulling it for Jesus. When you're making the thread, it's as if you're making the thread for Jesus. When you're making the coffee at the cafe, when you're doing the accounts, it's as if you're doing Jesus' accounts. When we're doing the stuff in the new place that we'll have, we're doing it for Jesus. And we're doing it well. So, tonight I just want to conclude by reminding us what I've talked about is that worship must be a priority. We're doing it for the Lord. And let's make sure that nothing interferes with the focus that this isn't about shop, this isn't about building, this isn't about us. It's about Jesus. Worship needs to be our priority. We need to dedicate ourselves to the Lord. We're doing work unto the Lord. We've got to remember that that we shouldn't be afraid to get our hands dirty, that there's a place for everyone, that some might be too proud to work, but others worked diligently with all their hearts.